little clothes store outside and you can sell socks and blankets and things and make money out of doing it. If we come in, we invite you in. Another shoot down line nine. So thank you all for coming. This is Rindu Tulku. We're very honoured and very glad that you could come this evening and do the Dharma talk for us. Those of you who I don't know or I haven't seen before, we have a registration form at the front if you're going to be around in Thailand. And you can join in with the activities that we have on Little Bangkok Sangha. This is a project of mine, and I try to put all the Dhamma events that I know about in Bangkok that are in English all onto the one website. And so hopefully anybody who doesn't know, you can find your way to the website, or people I haven't seen before, and join in the various different activities that we have. This week and next week we have a whole bunch of activities with Rinpoche Tulku Rinpoche. And then later on in the month we have a Dhamma talk with a visiting bhikkhuni. Those of you who are wondering why the Sangha in Thailand is all male dominated or run by monks, actually there are lady monks also, bhikkhunis, and we've invited one of them for the end of the month. And next month we also have a trip to go and see Ajahn Jayasaro, which I'll be announcing tomorrow if I get time. We'll be hiring a couple of minibuses to go out and see Ajahn Jayasaro in Pak Chong, so that'll be quite cool. So, is everybody ready? I think we're good, Rinpoche.
Yeah.
If we can, first of all, thank you for coming and spending this time
this evening. Thank you so much.
And invite you to give us the Dhamma talk this evening.
Thank you very, very much. And first of all, I must thank the Reverend Master and the little bank. It doesn't seem to be so little group for inviting me here. Giving this opportunity to be here this evening. The topic that you have given me is the Four Noble Truths from the Vajrayana point of view. I don't know whether it's really a different view of Vajrayana on the Four Noble Truths, because I think this is something I first have to say. In Buddhist kind of the world, we find generally three main categories. The Theravadins, the Mahayanas, and Vajrayanas. Now, maybe this is how the Vajrayana point of view is on how to see this tree, is this, that all the teachings of what we call Shravakayana, we don't call Hinayana. There's nothing in any of the sutras written as Hinayana. There's written Shravakayana. And Shravakayana teachings or the sutras are the basis of Theravada. And how this happened is, after Buddha passed away, then the Buddhist ordained Sangha kind of went into two groups. It's not that they had a fight. They didn't have any fight or any kind of conflict on the teachings. It was just the basis of what language would they use to say the sutras, especially the Vinaya Sutra. The elements, that chose to say the sutras in Pali language, as you know, Theras are called the elements. Those who are, you know, ordained for more than 10 years can become Theras, and you know, the Mahatheras and things like that. So, those elder monks who chose to use the Pali language became Theravada. And those, the younger monks, kind of majority, who chose to use the Sanskrit language as the medium through which they would say the sutras, especially the Vinaya Sutra, became Mahasanghikas. And later on, the sutra, the Sanskrit, the Mahasanghika group of the monks, then became kind of established universities, like Nalanda University, Vikramashwara University, and all these things. And then there, lots of studies and lots of different areas of Buddhist knowledge, and, you know, Buddhist kind of different kind of studies were developed and studied, and there, that was the basis of the Mahayana and later Vajrayana also. Now, as far as the basic teachings of the Buddha is concerned, the sutras, what we call the Savakayana, is the basis of all the teachings, all the Buddhist schools. There is nobody saying that, okay, all the teachings that are in the Savakayana, like One Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, and all these things, is not what I'm going to practice because I am Mahayana. Or this is not what I don't need to practice then because I'm Vajrayana. It's not like that. A Vajrayana follower has to practice and study Four Noble Truths and Eightfold Path as much as anybody else. Without that, there's no Buddhism. It's a little bit like, it's a little bit seen from the Vajrayana point of view, like a house with many stories. If you go to the higher, you know, like 22nd level of the this kind of a story, maybe you have a better view around. But without the first story, you cannot have the 22nd floor. That's exactly how it's seen from the Vajrayana point of view. That the, some things may be a little bit explained more clearly, or maybe something more, you know, more methods used for things like that. But the basis is as important to practice, as important to really understand and, you know, integrate. Otherwise, there's nothing. So therefore, you know, there is no Vajrayana teaching, no Mahayana teaching, which says that, you know, you don't have to go through the Four Noble Truths, you don't have to do this Eightfold Path, you just go directly somewhere. It's not there. That's not. And therefore, we have these three precepts. Vinaya, Bodhisattva, and Vajrayana precepts. So the Vinaya precept is the basic, you know, Savakayana way of life. You have precepts for the lay people, you have precepts for the ordained people, you know, non-ordained people. And that is the basis. If a Vajrayana person you know, starts to practice Dharma, they have to take the same precepts as anybody else. But on top of that, they might also take the Bodhisattva, because Vinaya is the conduct of body and speech mainly. Mainly to refrain from doing negative things. Then on top of that, the Mahayana or Bodhisattvayana is more about compassion, more about, you know, working on your loving kindness and compassion and dedicating yourself to work for the benefit of not only yourself, but for the others too. Then, Vajrayana, a little bit more deeply understanding the nature of your mind and working with many more skillful means on how to deal with your emotions and habitual tendencies. So this is the way, you know, this for the three different levels of, or three different, okay, kinds of, three different schools, the major schools of Buddhism, it's all about. So therefore, when I talk about the Four Noble Truths, I don't think it's like this is the Vajrayana way. You know, there is nothing which is only Vajrayana way. It has to be said. If I make something that's different, that's my problem. Or my way of understanding. It's not the Vajrayana way, it's my way of trying to understand. So this I have to say first, because there is no separate thing of Vajrayana way of Four Noble Truths. So Four Noble Truths actually is very vast, as you know. It includes the whole of Buddhism. There's nothing in Buddhism which is, you know, outside the Four Noble Truths. Everything, every Buddhist teaching is included in the Four Noble Truths. There's nothing outside that. That goes for Vajrayana, Mahayana, and Sarvakayana. Same. Now, from the, you know, when you look at the Four Noble Truths, I understand it like this. It's like, you know, I think Buddhism is basically, this is my understanding, Buddhism is a way of solving a problem. It is so, because, you know, it is seen like this, I think, you know, because when Buddha first, you know, went out of his palace, you know, he wanted to find a way to be free from suffering, because he saw suffering in the world. He saw, you know, not only kind of soluble, you know, suffering that kind can be solved, like, you know, poverty and education and, you know, things like that. But he saw problems or sufferings in the world which is very difficult to get rid of, like, you know, old age, sickness, death, which is happening to everybody. So which, you know, it's not something that you can do something. So we have lots of problems that we can actually go and change it. You know, if we are cold, then we can make fire and make it warm. But if we are, you know, aging, the makeup doesn't do much, you know. So what can we do? So there are lots of things like that. So the idea was that is there anything I can do about those things that is no real, you know, you cannot do anything about? And that's where I think the Buddhism is focused on. When something is happening, like dying, for instance, everybody dies. What can we do about that? So, you know, always there is, you know, things that I want and doesn't happen, things I don't want and it happens, things like that. In order to change that, then I have to be in control of everything. And I cannot be in control of everything. So there, the Buddha went in search of what is it, how can I? Because it is every being, every human being especially, we wish to be free from problems and pain and suffering and wish to be, you know, totally satisfied and, you know, joyful and happy, but how to do that? Is it possible to do something or have, there is a way, even there is nothing we can do about it? And I think that's where, you know, the whole teaching of the Buddha is focused on. So, you know, suffering, the pain, the problems, suffering is the problem. We need to understand the problem first. Because if you don't understand what's the problem, there's no way to solve the problem. So therefore, you know, when you talk about this truth of suffering, of course there is different stages to understand that also. Buddha actually, when he first gave the teaching of the Four Noble Truths after he attained enlightenment to the five of his first disciples, it is said that he repeated these Four Noble Truths three times in this way. He first said, there is suffering. There's causes of the suffering. There's cessation of the suffering. There's the path to get to the cessation of suffering. And then second time he said, there is suffering, we must understand the suffering. We must understand that. Recognize that. There is the causes of suffering. You must eliminate these causes of suffering. There is the cessation of suffering. You must attain, or you must actualize the cessation of the suffering. There is the path to the cessation of suffering. You must practice, or you must, you know, attain. You must actually, you know, practice those path to the cessation of suffering. This is the second time. And the third time he said, there is suffering. You have to understand it. But there is nothing to understand. There is the causes of suffering. You must eliminate these causes. But there is nothing to eliminate. There is the cessation of suffering. You must actualize that. But there is actually nothing to cease. There is the path to the cessation of suffering. You must practice them, you must accomplish them. But there's nothing to accomplish. So he explained these Four Noble Truths in these three kind of levels, three stages. And that was his first teaching. So therefore, you know, when we say there's suffering, sometimes it is misunderstood by people. I heard some people who didn't understand, I think, very well. Buddhism, Buddhists, they see the life is suffering. For Buddhists, life is suffering, so there is nothing, no joy, no, and no happiness. Life is always suffering. You know, it's not saying that life is all suffering. It's saying that the suffering is there, but it's about how to free from suffering. I think this is very important to understand. You know, there is lots of suffering. There's lots of problems. Everybody has that, but it's not. You know, it's about how to free from suffering. And what Buddha was saying is that there's lots of suffering and lots of problems everybody has, but it is something that you can do something about. If there was nothing you could do about, then no use talking about it. You know, so therefore, you know, suffering is the thing, the problem that you need to solve. You can solve by understanding, by looking at the causes of it, and then working on those, you know, eliminating those causes, and using the different ways and means, then you can have the cessation. Cessation meaning it is freedom from suffering. So therefore, when we talk about suffering, it's not like, you know, oh yes, you know, suffering, it's all there. Of course, this is also good to understand. You know, we talked about samsara. And I always say, it's very important for us to understand samsara, meaning the suffering, meaning the problem. Otherwise, we expect too much from ourselves, from others, you know, from the life, and then we feel very bad, because when expectations grow too much, then we are never happy. Because if you think that everything has to be 100% good and right and, you know, go well, then it doesn't happen like that. Then we feel very unhappy, we'll feel very, you know. This happens more and more, I think. I saw lots of people in the West, young people especially, having lots of self-confidence problems. And I was thinking, why is it like that? Because it's developed lots of freedom, you know, lots of, you know, opportunities, you know, very good conditions most of the time, much better than many countries in the East. And I think it's my opinion, maybe I'm wrong, it's because, you know, when you say you have all the choices, you know, you can, you know, you have lots of opportunities, you have many opportunities, then you think, oh yes, I have lots of opportunities, now I should be, you know, like, I should be the best, you know? I should be as beautiful as the most beautiful, I should be as rich as the most rich, I should be as popular as the most popular, and if I set myself as like that much expectation, then of course I'm not like that. I have equal opportunity, but I'm not equal at the top. I'm different from everybody else. So therefore, if I say that I should be like that, And even if I'm like this, I feel I'm no good. No? But if you think that I can be like this, and if you're like this, you feel I'm really good. So therefore, also not only me, but others also, you know, everybody should be so nice and so kind. Then if somebody is a little not nice and a little not kind, they say, oh, they're but if you know that, you know, everybody is a samsaric being. You know, they have they have their own problems, they have their own negative emotions, they have their own, you know, selfishness and everything. So, you know, if they can be little nice, little kind, little generous, it is very good. Then you can appreciate much more what, you know, good, little good things in others. So therefore, I thought that to understand the samsara, because from Buddhist point of view, samsara is a state of mind. A state of mind where, you know, we are always kind of either running after something or running away from something. We are never kind of, what can you say, content, satisfied. I don't have something, I want something more, I want to get something, I'm kind of not have enough, not have something. Kind of, what can you say, kind of craving for something, or afraid of something, fear, you know, I'm running away from something, this is not good, this shouldn't. When our mind is like that, that creates the problem, that creates, you know, suffering, that creates disturbance, that creates dissatisfaction. When we talk about suffering or dukkha, that dukkha means it has, you know, from the slightest dissatisfaction to great pain, all this called suffering, all this called dukkha. So therefore, what actually, you know, what actually suffering is that, you know, if I'm, you know, dissatisfied, if I want something more, if I don't think I have what I need, if I'm, you know, or am I afraid that something is going to be lost, you know, feel bad about that, then it's suffering. So therefore, when that kind of state of mind if I have, then I'm in samsara. And most of us, I don't know all of you, but you know, are in samsaric state of mind. And so therefore, when we have the samsaric state of mind, we have fear, we have attachment, we have craving, you know, then we get angry, hateful, you know, ignorance, you know, jealous, all sorts of pain, problem, hurt feeling, all these negative emotions, sadness, you know. And so therefore, you know, what can we do about this? You know, the sufferings, the pain, that, you know, there's very lots of physical pain and problems, there's emotional pain and problems. The physical pain and problems are also not unrelated with this, you know, emotional and, you know, and the mental, you know, because every pain is actually, sometimes people make lots of differences, but this is totally physical. Sometimes people say, oh, this is totally physical. But there is nothing physical which is not mental also. And there's, you know, because, you know, there's nothing mental which is not physical. Sometimes if you are, you know, if you're sad, if somebody is sad or happy, it immediately reflects on your body. Even if you see somebody from your behind, I think you can say more or less what kind of mood in this person is. Because if you are sad, then you're like this, you know. You're not moving, you're not, you know, looking here and there, you're just a little bit cool. If you're in a good mood, then you can see. Yeah? So you can even see from behind. So it's physical. There's nothing only mental which is not physical, and which is, you know, everything is physical. Physical means, you know, if you have pain, who feels the pain? There's nobody, you know, there's, if you are just body is feeling the pain alone, then you could be feeling the pain even if you are dead. But no, you know, the dead body doesn't feel, so therefore your mind is feeling. So therefore every physical is mental. So therefore, the, you know, the suffering is in that way. It's difficult to totally, you know, differentiate the mind and the body. It's a so therefore, you know, what can we do about this? What is this? What are the main causes of our dissatisfaction, of our painful experience, of our not happy? And then this is what, you know, what from Buddhist point of view, the causes of the suffering. The causes of suffering, usually the Buddha gives two main, klesha and karma. Klesha is emotions, negative emotions, disturbed emotions. The way you, you know, your mind reacts. Anger, hatred, you know, or like greed, and then also confused, you know, like ignorance, not understanding clearly, but very confused. This kind of a, you know, the mind not in a, you know, peaceful state, but you know, very emotionally, either unsatisfied emotion, disturbed state of mind. That's, you know, the negative emotions, and especially not understanding clearly, the ignorance. This is called the questions, because all this, you know, pain has to come from a disturbed state of mind. And if you look deeply, if we look deeply, we can see, not without too much difficulties, that in that samsaric state of mind, which gives us, you know, dissatisfaction and painful state of mind, unkind of happy situation, it's always that kind of emotion is, you know, kind of paramount. So therefore, you know, to clearly see, if I'm, you know, like dominated by a certain emotion, like anger, or hateful, jealousy, too much greed, craving, you know, or confusion, or not knowing what's going on, ignorance, knowing clearly about the things. This is the causes of the, you know, the main, you know, dissatisfaction that we all have. This causes of the samsara. We discussed this before also, that, you know, the samsaric state of mind is either running away from some, wanting to, trying to run away and trying to run after. And when we have, we are in that state of mind, then we have, you know, we are kind of painful, because I give you one example, because sometimes people think, oh, maybe, you know, there is kind of a deep anger and hate and this kind of fear, and this is bringing suffering. But attachment should be there, but many people think like that. Now, why it's not like that? It's not saying that sometimes people misunderstand this. This misunderstanding has to be cleared right from the beginning. Some people come, oh, I cannot practice Buddhist. Why? Because attachment, you know, I cannot get, you know, I cannot not love my children. I said, who asked you not love your children? You have to love not only your children, but you have to love the whole world. And that's what Buddha was teaching. So they don't understand this. Attachment is this, that you are kind of, the way we react, you know, the wrong way of reacting, in a way. Because say like, this is nice, you know, something you see is nice. Something you see nice is not the problem. It's nice, it's a beautiful cup, very beautiful cup, no? That's not a problem. I can see it, anybody can see it. I think even the Buddha can see it. It's a nice, beautiful cup. It's a nice, beautiful cup. But now my samsaric mind says, this is a nice, beautiful cup. You know, I must have this cup. You know? So, how can I get this cup? Can I buy it? Can I be very nice to the owner so that they give me? You know, can I do something, you know, what can I do? And then, when I'm that divine, this is so nice that I can't be happy unless I have this cup. If my mind is reacting in that way, then this cup becomes a problem for me. This cup is not a problem. My way of reacting to it is a problem. You know? So then if I say like that, then, you know, now I have to do everything to get this cup. I cannot enjoy just a cup. I have to do, you know, who owns this cup? Yeah. And then, you know, I have to go and, you know, do something, you know, to make place or to give some money or trying to take it. So, you know, it's a struggle. You know, it's a painful, you know, it's a running after my cup. But once I get the cup, I may not get the cup, and I get disappointed. But if I get the cup, then two things can happen. One thing is, I don't want the cup anymore. Many times it happens like that. After all, it's not so nice, you know. There must be a better cup. Then another problem, how to get rid of this cup? Then it's another problem. But if I see like this, really the cup I wanted, it's so nice, it's really great, then another problem. Now, you know, I might break this cup, you know, somebody might take away this cup, somebody might discover that I have, you know, got this cup through different means, so, you know. So I have a fear. A fear of losing this cup. And the fear of losing this cup doesn't end until either I lose this cup or I don't want this cup anymore. If I lose this cup, then I have the same problem in the beginning. You know? How can I get this nice cup that I have lost? So therefore, it's a continuous problem. Whether I have the cup and don't have the cup is the problem, you know. So in this way, even nice things that you are, you know, you make into a problem for yourself. That's what we're going to attach. Yeah? And then if you have, you know, if you have aversion, and this is something very bad, I don't like this, you know, whatever it is, and then I should not have this, you know. And then I fear of getting that, and the fear of getting that doesn't go away till I actually don't have that fear, or I get it. If I get it, then it's more problem. So whatever you do, we have this way of reacting, we always have the problem. But therefore that's the cause of our suffering. That's the direct cause of suffering, is this kind of way of reacting, what we call klesha. And then that klesha, this aversion attachment, is coming from because I don't exactly understand what the thing is, why, you know, I don't understand what I am. I don't understand how the nature of the things are. I misunderstand what brings more, you know, more satisfaction, more joy in me, and what brings suffering. Because I have thought that what actually brought me more dissatisfaction, more suffering, I thought is the source of my happiness. This ignorance, not understanding clearly. So therefore these three becomes the, you know, the basis of all negative emotions. And these negative emotions then create actions and the karma. With this, you know, aversion, attachment, ignorance, makes you act with your body, speech, mind in a negative way, you know, which not only causes pain and problem to myself, but also others. If I act on those emotions, on the way of seeing, or way of, you know, reacting, then I cause problems for others also. If we look into the history of the world, I don't think there is any kind of any war, for instance, which is not based on any of this either. You know, all the wars, all the, you know, great kind of devastations in the world, if you look deeply, you have these three things. You know, either, you know, hatred, or greed, or ignorance. So therefore, either in our daily life, or in our history, or in the humanity, if you look, you know, the main causes of suffering inflicted on ourselves or others, you'll find these main, you know, reactions, the emotions, so therefore, and the actions created out of that. So therefore, you know, these are the causes of suffering. The causes, the main causes of suffering. And if we can do something about that, then there's a possibility of total happiness, total peace, satisfaction, joy. So this is the discovery of the Buddha. This is what Buddha, you know, understood, that it's about working on our way of experiencing. It's not the real true happiness, the true solution to our, you know, kind of never-ending problem of samsara, is not in outside things. The wealth is not going to change anything. The power is not going to change anything. You know, the popularity is not going to change anything. The luxury and pleasure and is not going to change anything. Only thing that can really transform us is through our own way of experiencing ourselves. So therefore, you know, by working on that, by transforming that, then there's a possibility to have the experience of the greatest happiness, the joyfulness. And with that happiness, that joy, that, you know, that freedom is not something that you get from somewhere. It's something you get rid of something. You know, that's why enlightenment is said to be attainment by getting, you know, it's by kind of freeing from something. The Tibetan word is tato, that you free something, you kind of unfold something, and that is the result. Result is not, you know, usually when you say I get something, you know, attain enlightenment. So attain something you have to get that you don't have before. It's not like that. But here it is, you just have to understand something. You just have to, you know, free yourself from something, some misunderstanding, some misconcept, some wrong way of, you know, seeing or reacting. And that freeing, that, you know, understanding, that kind of letting go, that, you know, is the result. So the result is not something that you get, something extra that you didn't have, but really knowing clearly, by clearly seeing what it is, what you are, what, you know, how to react. So therefore there's nothing to get, it's to more to understand. That's why it's called enlightenment. Bodhi, the word bodh means know. The word bodh in Sanskrit means know. Bodhi means the knowing. So what you didn't understand before, what didn't you clearly see before, you just see more clearly and things like that. It's not something to get from outside. It's just to see clearly. You know? So therefore, you know, the understanding here is, if the problem of our suffering is misunderstanding. If the problem is misunderstanding, then you must understand. It is understandable. Misunderstanding needs to be able to be cleared. There's no misunderstanding which could not be cleared. You know, it may be difficult, but it could be, has to be able to be cleared. Because of the misunderstanding, then it can be understood. So that's the basis of the, you know, the cessation. The cessation can be understood, can be experienced, can be realized, because the cause of, the main cause is misunderstanding, so therefore it has to be understood. And therefore, it's possible and achieved great beings, Buddha, and many, not only Buddha, but, you know, continuously from that, you know, till now, many, many beings have actually realized that and brought their own, you know, lasting peace and happiness in their lives. But it is something that one has to experience oneself. It's not something you can just give it to somebody. That's why Buddha said, you know, I show you the way, it's up to you whether you take it or not. It's not something that you can give. It's not a blessing. The Buddha said that my most magnificent miracle is my teaching. There's no other miracle which is most, you know, which is so magnificent. He said that my most important and most miraculous miracle is my teachings. Because if you understand them, if you practice them, then you will get liberated. So that's the understanding from Buddha. Now, what are these teachings? What are these methods? That's the path. The path is the path to liberation, is the way, how do I get this misunderstanding cleared? How do I work and how do I transform myself from this samsaric way of reacting? And this is the path, And these are the, you know, teachings. The Buddha gave not only one method. It is said that the Buddha gave many different methods, and this is the main understanding from Buddhist point of view, and this is why Buddhism becomes so kind of liberal, so non-sectarian. Because Buddha said, I don't teach just as I know things. I teach as what is needed to the people. So whatever person needs, you know, the way that person will be benefited with, I give that method to that person, that teaching, that, you know, that means. So therefore, you know, he said that himself also, that I don't teach just one way, I teach many ways, because many people need different ways, because many people are different in different levels. So that kind of make the Buddhism very kind of open-minded, and also the possibility of having many different, you know, schools and many different traditions and many different, you know, sutras. You know, that's why, you know, Buddhism has, like, Christianity has only one Bible. Buddhism Tripitaka is, I don't know how many volumes in Pali. In Tibetan we have like 100 volumes, you know, 100 big volumes of like 1,000 pages, just in translated into Tibetan, you know, and like that, and, you know, in Chinese there are even more, I think. So these kind of things, is, you know, he's not teaching just one thing, but many different methods. So therefore, you know, there are then this, you know, the teachings that is like Theravadin teachings, and Bodhisattva teachings, and Vajrayana teachings, all different kind of methods. And they are not really contradictory or anything like that, but, you know, slightly different, you know, slightly kind of different methods and things like that. And so it is not supposed to be. This is something which is very important. This is said like this in Vajrayana way, and I think it's said everywhere. It is not that this particular teaching is higher or lower. There's nothing called this is better, this is less better. What is suitable to you is the best for you. You know? This is said like that. In Vajrayana teaching, they said that this is the teaching I give you. This, you know, this is very profound, that's very, you know, very, but it doesn't mean that this is suitable to you. If you don't understand it, if it is not, you know, practicable for you, if it doesn't, you know, if you are not kind of suitable for that, then it is not suitable. It's not the best for you. Something else must be better for you. So therefore, it is said that Buddhism, you know, the Buddha said, and many others, the great masters said that you cannot say that this teaching is better than that. If you say that this kind of teaching of Buddha is better than that, then you are actually giving up the Buddha's teachings. That's what they say. So therefore, every teaching is good as long as you first understand. This is very important. I always think like this, that when people come to me and say, what practice should I do better? Is better? Which is better? I say, I don't know. You understand. Because what teachings you can understand? I say this. Maybe you receive teachings from different, you know, masters in different traditions. What teaching do you understand best? I said, whatever you understand best, maybe I think that's the best for you. Because if you don't understand, how are you going to practice? Because you don't understand anything, so how can you practice it, you know? So we need to understand the practice. Understand the practice means that this way of doing is working on this, my pleasure, you know, my emotions and my way of reacting, my mind poisons, this is going to work in this way, yes, so therefore it's good for me. If I can connect these two, if I can connect that, if I, therefore it's very important to understand the cause of suffering. Because there, that's where you have to hit the practice. It's not just by doing something. Okay, I do just in a mantra, and then you think that maybe one day something will happen. The light happens, or, you know, something appears, and then everything was. It's not like that. You know, you need to understand how this practice is going to work on my way of seeing, on my way of reacting, on my negative emotions, on my negative way of, you know, experiencing things. And if I see this, and then the connection that this, I do this way, and so, like if I meditate, you know, if I learn how to relax, if I learn how to kind of let a bit calm my mind, if I learn how to be more aware, more kind of mindful, then I can see that, yeah, that will help me to, you know, bring more peace and more. So, I do that. So therefore, the more you understand this, the more clear you are how to practice. But just knowing how to practice is not sand as practice. I think this is very important. Because knowing how to practice is one thing, which is not the most important, difficult thing. I mean, it's most important thing, but most not the most difficult thing. It's easier to learn how to practice. But once you know how to practice, then doing it is the problem. And sometimes when we study Buddhism, it happens very often, you know, that we study something and then, oh, this I understand, this is simple. This, oh, this I don't understand. And then you go like this, you know, I studied one book, so second book, you know, third book, you know, and then at the end of like 10 books, I've studied 10 books, you know, I understand. But what we have here, you know, nothing, because, you know, all those you understood, it's simple, you know, you just threw it like this. All those you didn't understand, okay, you threw it like this, so you don't have anything. So I think the most important thing is what you understand. What you don't understand, okay, for the time being, you can keep it there, you know. It's not necessary that you have to reject it, because, you know, it's just you don't understand. Maybe it's, you know, after some time you'll understand it and then find it very important for you. But then it's okay. But, you know, those you understand, that we understand, that I think is the important thing that we chew on. No? We actually use it in our life. Sometimes I think a very simple thing, if you really use it, can totally transform our life. So therefore, in one way, it's very complicated, because Buddhism is a lots of teachings, you know, lots of things there, lots of information, lots of philosophy, lots of, you know. But in another way, you don't need all of them. You know. What you understand and what you really can, you know, clearly see is good for you, you just work on that, and that's what really can transform. So therefore the path is like that. And I just didn't talk too much about the Eightfold Path, because I think you have heard lots of stories, a lot of teachings on the Eightfold Path. But this is the general understanding. You know? And of course, the Eightfold Path becomes the, you know, focus. There is no Buddhist, you know, practice which is not kind of which does not have to practice the Eightfold Path. You know? Eightfold Path is the kind of framework. It's very, very important. Very, very important. I don't think we have the time to go into this detail, but basically, you know, all the Eightfold Path also can be abbreviated into three things: right view, right action, and right meditation. In these three things, all the Eightfold Path is included. Right view becomes very important because, as we have discussed this, you know, to understand clearly what is what, you know, what is the problem, what is the cause of the problem, you know, that is important. That's, you know, see things, how my actions are causing its reactions, you know. If I am in a certain way now, certain way of reacting with negativity, reacting with anger, reacting with frustration, reacting with tension, and if I keep on doing that, I will become more and more of that. So therefore, if way of reacting that I am doing is not good for me, is bringing, I need to stop that. There's no other way. I have to change that, and I have to find ways and means to change that. You cannot bear it to somebody else. You cannot ask Buddha to change it for you. You know? So therefore, you know, this understanding becomes very important. And this is, you know, something which is very, very hard, actually, in a way. Once I was having a kind of a training on a Buddhist kind of teachers, you know, teachers to be. And one day, you know, they didn't have many questions, so I asked them a question. And I asked them three questions. It is in the West. And the first question I asked was, you know, what is it that you found most important, most, you know, kind of helpful in the Buddhist studies that you have done for many years? And the second question was, what is it that you really disliked in the teachings that you have received so far in Buddhism? And the third is, if you met a kind of a very beginner Buddhist practitioner, or very somebody who didn't know anything about Buddhism, and said, what is Buddhism all about? What would you say? And then it became very interesting because everybody said, you know, their own ways of things. And it went on for 2 days. But one elder gentleman, you know, he gave me an answer which I thought was very interesting, so I'll share it with you. He said, the thing that kind of was most beneficial and, you know, important for me about Buddhism was that you are responsible for yourself. Nobody else can be responsible for yourself. You are responsible for yourself. Then he said, but the worst thing, the most difficult thing about Buddhism is just that. That I have to be responsible for myself. And then he said that if somebody comes, you know, really fresh and says, what is about Buddhism? I would say that you are responsible for yourself. So it's a little bit like that. You know, it's not to say that nobody can help. No, of course, you know, you can get help from, you know, maybe from the Buddhas, from the, you know, the Arhats and Bodhisattvas and, you know, your Sangha and things like that. But eventually it's up to you. You know, there's, you know, nobody can do it for you. You know, you have to do it for yourself. So therefore, you know, it's difficult. You know, it's kind of, you cannot just, you know, ask somebody to do it for you. You know, you have to transform yourself. So therefore you have to understand, you have to clarify, you have to learn how to, you know, transform yourself. You know, that's the meditation. And the meditation is actually doing. You know? First learning how to make your mind calm and clear and flexible. You know? All meditation, all Buddhist meditation, whether it's Shavakayana, whether it's Mahayana, whether it's Vajrayana, can be included in these two meditations. Cannot have anything else. That's Shamatha and Vipassana. All meditation in Buddhism is included in these two. There are different ways of doing those things. But, you know, it is Samatha and Vipassana. And Samatha and Vipassana is also not totally two things. You know, it's intermingled. The Samatha is about how to make your mind calm, clear, and flexible. You know, like our mind is a little bit unflexible, you know, it kind of goes in one way and you cannot, you know, if I say, now stop thinking, I won't stop thinking. And say then now, you know, don't think about that, but think of that. It wouldn't, you know, it doesn't do, you know. Now, so it would go its own kind of crooked way. So, Samatha is about how to bring this flexibility to the mind. You should say, okay, now relax, then visualize. It's like, you know, tamed dog, for instance. And a nice tamed dog, you say, sit down. Yeah. Stand up, you know, a little bit like that. Your mind does what you want it to do. And to make that happen, you need to also learn how to make your mind more relaxed and more kind of, more pliable, you know. So learning how to let be, how to kind of not to be so rigid. Well, that's the meditation of, you know, the different methods of Samatha. And once that helps, that's the important kind of basis on which to understand the, you know, the Vipassana is to see, to understand, to clearly experience what the mind is all about, how the things actually are. You know. So to wisdom, is the wisdom. Sometimes we call it wisdom. Wisdom is what, you know, the way to bring wisdom is the Vipassana. Vipassana is to see things clearly. All the, you know, but that wisdom, Vipassana, is also, has to start with calming the mind, you know, being aware. It's not that conceptually, oh, it's like this, this is the way it is. It's not like that. But knowing from experience, knowing on how to deal with myself, knowing how to, you know, the difference between wisdom and knowledge. How do you describe a wise person? Wise person is not just one with long beard. You know? Wise person is somebody who has an answer to any situation. You know? Who knows how to deal with any situation is a wise person. You know? So therefore, when you say wisdom, whatever happens, I know how to deal with that. That's the right wisdom. So therefore, when you know that whatever may happen, you know, good things may happen, bad things may happen, you know, all sorts of things may happen, but it's okay, I know how to deal with this. That's wisdom. So when you have wisdom, you know how to deal with anything because you know the nature of it. You know what is it, what you are, what everything is in its essential way. So therefore the Vipassana is for that, to really understand your mind, you know, in a practical way, not in a conceptual way. It's not that if you are a philosopher, you know lots of things, you can talk about everything. That doesn't make you wisdom, but that doesn't make you a Vipassana practitioner. So therefore this practice of Samatha and Vipassana is the meditation, and that, you know, that to do that, to work on that, and it's not only, this is the important thing from Buddhist point of view, your understanding, your experience, you know, your kind of working on emotional and wisdom and things like that, very important, but how you actually act with your body and speech is very important, because that's where we start, you know. If you're thinking you are doing something really great, but actually you are acting foolishly with everybody around you, then it doesn't work. So therefore, action, you know. That's why people say, your view has to be high. Your wisdom can go very high, but your actions has to be very low, and very, you know, what you do with your body, with your speech, you have to be, you know, clear and see what is, you know, that is not harming anybody, that's not harming yourself, but is helpful to yourself, helpful to others. And then you can be useful to society, you can be good for yourself, because if you act in a bad way, in a negative way, that will bring problems for you, however, you know, high thinking you have. So therefore, all the practices comes down to these three things: view, meditation, action. So maybe I think I should not talk too much, and I would like to, you know, discuss more. So if you have any questions regarding those things that I said or those things I haven't said, you are most welcome.
I don't think you can talk too much with very eager listeners.
Thank you.
So, if anybody has any questions, you're welcome. I actually have one, since I have the microphone.
Okay.
One thing, in the Pali, with the arising of suffering, dukkha samudaya in the Pali, and there's three causes in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. I know that the Pali, you have to try to catch the Sanskrit, but I think you can get the meaning of the word, the Pali words, right? Mm-hmm. So in the Dhammacakka Sutta, the cause of the arising of suffering was the Gama Tanha, or the sense desire. And the second one was Bhava Tanha, or desire for becoming, craving for becoming. And the third one, Vipava Tanha, the craving for ceasing or non-becoming. This one, there's those two, the craving for becoming and non-becoming. Can you elucidate a little on those two?
Coming from becoming and not becoming. I don't know, maybe. We usually talk about it, dukkhas, like three dukkhas. You know, we talk about three dukkhas, that's what we are talking about, no? Mm. Are you? Maybe, yeah.
It's coming from the Pali, I know, yeah. It's from a different line. So
yeah. We talk about these three dukkhas,
uh-huh.
And that is, we said that the first one is, sometimes we call it suffering of suffering. And the suffering of change. I mean, these things, you know, there are so many translations, you know, and then each translator is using a different, terminologies, and sometimes that's kind of a little bit of a problem. And then all pervasive suffering, these three things. I'm not sure whether this is exactly the same or not, because I've never studied any Pali so far. I would like to, but the suffering of suffering is like the suffering, it's actually pain, you know, if you lose something that you don't want to lose, if you don't get something that you want to get, you know. And you know, this like physical pain or something, those kind of things is the first kind of suffering, we call it, acute pain. The second is the change. That means that you have no problem, you know? You're okay. It's a little bit like, you know, how are you? Touch wood, I'm okay. You know, I have no problem now, but, you know, it might happen. The fear of change, you know, the fear of something might happen, that the fear, you know. And this is when actually you have not much problem now, but the fear. Then, the third one is like what we call this whole pervasive suffering, sometimes it's translated like that. And that is, you know, like it's kind of the momentariness of things. Everything is impermanent, it is so momentary. And that you are kind of, although yourself and everything else is momentary, you have a concept of being not momentary. So therefore, you are kind of, the way you see yourself or the others or things is totally kind of opposite of what it is. So therefore, you have always, you know, a problem, because you know, when you see it's like this and it's not like that, then you have a problem. So these three are the sources of the problems, of suffering, of pain. It's like, it's seen like this. Then there's, well, this is what I know.
Good, thank you. Okay. Do you have a question, a short question, and a Marcus?
Yeah, I've always had a problem understanding the Four Noble Truths.
I remember.
Huh?
I remember.
Yeah.
From your email.
It still remains completely unclear to me. Because every time you talk about the Four Noble Truths, you say, Dukkha, and in the first sermon, he would define stuff, he says, that dukkha is birth, old age, sickness, death, being attached to those things you don't like, being separated from those things you do like, blah blah blah. Now, if the second noble truth is desire or whatever, clinging, craving, leads to those, okay? And the third is get rid of the desire, get rid of the craving, bang, they're gone, okay? In what sense does getting rid of my desire get rid of, not my suffering, not the second arrow, in what sense does it get rid of the first arrow? The actual birth. My getting rid of desire gets rid of birth, then if that's the case, Buddhism is nihilistic. I mean, ignorance, the causational links, you know, life is a big mistake based on ignorance and desire. Can you go through that for me?
Okay. No, I think in this room, did everyone hear the question okay?
Yeah.
Or do you want me
yeah.
to repeat it?
No, I have understood the question.
I just want to check everyone has heard the question. Does anyone lift your hand up if you need us to repeat the question? You're all here, okay. Oh, you want? Okay. So he's asking that with the Four Noble Truths, the dukkha comes from birth, old age, sickness, and death.
No. The Buddha defines dukkha as birth, old age, sickness.
Okay, dukkha is birth, old age, sickness, and death. Now, if we're going to get rid of the desire, how does that get rid of the birth, and why do we want to get rid of birth? Does that mean that being born is some kind of cosmic mistake? Okay.
I don't think it's like this. I think it is not that birth is dukkha, you know. There is dukkha at birth. There's lots of suffering at birth. You know, you can see a mother giving birth, then you can see how painful that is. It's not that, you know, it's this, you know, this is what it is, what I was saying, that there are lots of pain in this kind of not only birth and death and this thing, but all along, you know, that not getting what you want and getting what you not want, losing your, you know, nice people and things like that, and all sorts of things. So there's lots of pain and problems. But, you know, the main question, I think, is like this, that these are the examples of things that we cannot avoid, you know. It's not possible not to have birth, unless, you know, everyone become monks and nuns. And then, you know, in one generation there will be nobody. That's the end of the world. But then I think you can just say that, you know, everybody don't become monks and nuns, and then the birth is finished, you know, and then you don't have to meditate. So this is not what it's saying, you know. What it's saying is that this becomes very painful to us, and it's something that we cannot change by, you know, getting rid of them. Is there anything we can do other than getting rid of them or not? Because there are lots of things that we cannot get rid of. Now this is the understanding from Buddhist point of view. This can, all these things can go on and still be free from suffering. And that is if we have changed our way of reacting to them. So that's the whole question, you know, that's the whole problem, you know. So it's not like being, you know, old or, you know, dying is a problem, but it's that, you know, how you die, or how you get old, or how you get sick, or how you go through the life is not, it's something else, and how nicely you get into, you know, that situation is another thing. So that's where I think the whole situation, the whole teaching is about. It's not about getting rid of birth and death, but on how do I experience that. So four noble truths all on that, I think.
There was a phenomenon of sometimes babies being born and saying things. I don't know if it's true, but it's reported to be true. And Adam Brown was telling that one baby was born, and when it was born it said, "Oh no, not again." So I think birth is definitely good there. Okay, it's another question or another comment. Okay.
I'm not all too familiar with Vaishrayana, but when you're saying that we have to walk our own path, we're responsible for ourselves, and enlightenment, if it does come, it will come from within, and that there would be, it's not like blessings that we get or something. So I want to ask you about the function of empowerment that you give.
If I can repeat the question to people. Rinpoche mentioned that you have to practice the path for yourself, central part of Buddhism. So he's asking, what about the empowerments that we have, that they have in Vajrayana Buddhism?
Empowerment is a teaching. Really, it's a teaching. It's a kind of a little bit like a guided meditation. And it has to be, you know, it's a teaching, it's a permission, it's also a transmission of this teaching, then, you know, it's something that the teacher practices, and then, you know, kind of gives this teaching along with, you can say blessing also, but blessing is influence in a way. From Buddhist point of view, the blessing is more like an influence.
Could you then say it's about suggestion? About suggesting?
Suggesting. From Buddhist point of view, blessing is more like, if I am with people who are always drinking, then I also start drinking. That's the blessing I get from them. Yeah.
We'll be finishing in a few minutes, so if people are getting restless, we won't be very much longer. Okay, is there any other question? Okay, Tejo.
How important is having a guide or a teacher or a master in the path?
How important is having a teacher?
Now this is the thing, you know, that the whole idea is that we want to be free from suffering and attain the lasting peace and happiness. That's, you know, whether we articulate like that or not, that's the main, you know, purpose everybody has. Now, we don't get there not because we don't want it, neither because we don't make efforts now, but because we don't know how to. So it's very important to learn how to. So what do you need to learn how to? You need somebody to tell you, no? But now this is also a little tricky. You know, this is not a theoretical thing, it's a practical thing. So it's like learning how to drive a car. And how do you learn how to drive a car? Can you learn to drive a car without a teacher? You can, but you cannot, you know? And you cannot be really taught also. You know? How does teacher do? I mean, the theory we can learn in few seconds, you know? This is brake, this is brake, you know? But the actual practical thing, the teacher cannot really teach you. You have to practice. But he can tell you, it's necessary to do this. Then, you know, if you drive on, you have to have a teacher, otherwise you can't do it, you know. He has to know how to drive, isn't it? But you can't, the teacher cannot just say, okay, now I teach you, finish. You have to do it yourself, you know. It's similar. I think it's exactly the same way, because it's a practical thing. It's the same like learning how to play music. How do you learn how to play music? You don't, you need to have it. Maybe there are some who are totally gifted and you don't need any teacher also. I mean, it's nothing like that, but you know, it's something like that. But you need to have a good teacher, otherwise a problem.
Okay, any last question? Last chance? Okay.
My first question is based on great ignorance. Is enlightenment permanent?
Is enlightenment permanent?
Yeah. I mean, enlightenment is just an understanding, so it's nothing there. Yeah, it's annoying. It's not about the thing. So you cannot say, you know, if there's not a thing, you can say this is permanent or impermanent. But it's like annoying. You know, say like, so this little band. Before I didn't know about little man. Yeah? That was ignorant. I know this little man. Is this permanent or impermanent? It's not a question about permanent, impermanent. It's something that I didn't know, now I know. Yeah? So you cannot say, you know, since when you didn't know little man? there's no beginning of not knowing the today, because there's no beginning to the ignorance. But now I know little bang. So you say, when will you unknow little bang? There's no time, and then I can unknow my little bang. So it's like that. Okay. It's a little bit like that. You can't say it's permanent and impermanent because it's not a thing.
Hopefully it lasts a long time. Okay, I think that's all we have time for. We could go on a bit longer, but we have Rinpoche for a number of events over the next couple of weeks. So we've all got plenty of opportunities to come back and see him again over the next couple of weeks. So I hope you can all come and take the opportunity while he's here in Thailand. If you don't know the websites or where the information are, there's some sheets out the front with the websites, the little bang for the English. I also link to the other websites, Thousand Stars and Shambhala, for a couple of the other events that are going on. We also have a sign-up sheet out the front. It's not a hard sell. I don't want to get your email and then sell you sticks of incense and things like this. But if you are going to be in Bangkok and you're going to be around, we email out about once every couple of months, just when we have somebody big and really important here. So if you want to sign up for that, then the sheets are out the front. We also have a donation box. So far we've managed to cover all the expenses, for the living expenses, the transport, the airfare, everything, due to the donations of four or five particular people who've very kindly done that. We've also been able to do all these events free of charge by the kind donation of the venues, different venues. So Kundana has very kindly given us this venue tonight free of charge. If we had to pay for this kind of venue, we couldn't do it. So by the donation of a few people, we've managed to do everything for free of charge. So all the donations that are left over will go to Rinpoche and his school and a clinic and a retreat center. And as with most senior monks, there's always a lot of dependencies on him. So happily we can say all the donations will go to those projects in his places in Sikkim. We'd also like to donate to you the cup, by the way.
Then I have a problem to carry this cup.
And we also have some other events going on. We have the Zen workshop with a visiting Zen master on the, what day, 19th?
19th,
yeah. Saturday 19th. So there's still some places left for that?
About
10
places left.
About 10 places left. I'll have one of them. And so there'll be about 9 places left for anyone else who wants to sign up for that. And also 12 more places for the weekend workshop at the end of the month on bodywork, intensive body awareness workshop. The announcement's just come up for that. So thank you very much, Rinpoche, and we look forward to having
you. Thank you so much.
For the rest of the week.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming. That's it.
Thank you.
You have a... Okay. Well, we have a box. So also, if anyone has any individual offerings, you're welcome to come up and give to Rinpoche, or I can take a picture of you with him, or whatever.
Thank you.
half an hour later.